Bruce Pratt in the house for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101, and we've been looking forward to hearing about this book since you first brought it in a few weeks back.
Yeah, this is a really interesting book. It's by a guy named Steve Currier, who is a Canadian and a well-known hockey historian who fell in love with the story of the California Golden Seals. Now, we got to give a little bit of quick history. Way too many people I run into believe that the National Hockey League expanded from the original six because of the WHA. No, it expanded from the original six because there was a lot of push and a lot of revenue that they saw available in the West. And the Western Hockey League, which was just equivalent of AAA, like the American Hockey League is today, was talking about bumping themselves up into a full-fledged league that would compete. Since many of the Western Hockey League teams had affiliations with, in one way or another, with the original six, they put in six more teams. And one of the teams that was put in 1967 was the California Seals, who were at different times the Oakland Seals, the California Golden Seals. And San Francisco had a hockey tradition. They had been in the Western Hockey League for many years, though they had never been a greatly successful team. And the Seals also were later for 1 year, for 2 years, the Cleveland Barons, till they were merged with the Minnesota North Stars. Then eventually they became the Dallas Stars. But to give you an idea, in the Western Hockey League, where they competed from 1961 to 1967, they had two winning seasons. Other than that, they finished at 429, 479, 457, 472, and 498 in winning percentage. Okay, well, you know, in hockey, there was a time when the expansion of teams with losing records made it to the playoffs. But let's take a look at the California Oakland Seals' all-time winning percentages over their history as a National Hockey League team. And the highest they ever got was 454. And in 1973-74, they had a winning percentage of 231.
Okay. Oh, my.
I mean, in those days, a tie was worth 1 point. They had 13 wins, 55 losses, and 10 ties. Now, you would think that this must be because they never had any good players. Au contraire. There were at times some excellent players that played for California, but what they had is the greatest string of both bad luck and stupid management ever. But nothing tops. Nothing tops when Charlie O'Finley bought the California Seals, because the first thing he did was tell them they would play in white skates. Now, if you tell the average Canadian, or certainly the average Franco-American male of that age, you're going to wear white skates, you're going to get a two-word response you don't want to hear. And that is because to them, that is for figure skates. And the only people who wear white skates are women. Men do not wear white skates. Okay, we can talk about that being old-fashioned, that being sexist. Maybe it was, but it really teed the players off. Secondly, Finley had really no interest, and he just thought if he could break even in hockey, he'd be happy. Well, the Seals couldn't break even. The Seals never made any money as an NHL team or a WHL team because they played in the Cow Palace, which was 15 feet short of regulation, and nobody came out. I mean, if the Broad Street Bullies came to town and they knew there were going to be a bunch of brawls, it was like demolition derby. People showed up. The place would be packed. But other nights, they'd play in front of 2,500 people. I mean, this is NHL hockey. Now, obviously, from the late 60s to the early 70s, save for the sort of the Rangers, Bruins, and the little bit of dash that the Flyers had, it was not a great time in hockey. You know, hockey did not have a national TV package. It was not nearly as big a sport as it is today. But some great players wound their way through the California Golden Seals. But so the WHA comes along a couple of years into Charlie Finley's ownership, and they start offering really good players really good money. And people like Bobby Hull and Gordie Howe go, yeah, I'd like to make really good money. Because a star in the league in those days might only be making 45 or 50 grand. And we're not making basketball money or football or certainly not baseball money. And when the WHA came along and started offering guys $150,000, $200,000 a year, they jumped ship. Well, Charlie could have, but the problem was the people who played for Oakland loved living in the Bay Area. They really liked it. They thought it was a great place to be. So they would go to Finley and say, well, you know, if you give me 5,000 more, I'll stay here. No. And they would jump and bolt. And he would continually fire and bring in new coaches, new general managers. Bill McCreary was there twice and oversaw just disaster. So finally, it looks like things are going to get better. The league owned them for a while. The league doesn't want them back, but they're going to move to Cleveland. So they moved to Cleveland, except they're going to play in the Richland Coliseum, which is 26 miles from downtown Cleveland on a two-lane road. And players who lived 8 miles away still took them an hour and 15 minutes to get home. Now, the players don't leave when the fans leave. So by the time the players are ready to leave, it was still taking them an hour and 15 minutes to go home. They don't have any attendance there. They're sold to the Gund brothers, G-U-N-D, Gund Arena, and moved eventually to Minnesota and merged with the Minnesota team. They become the Dallas Stars. And that's the first time that anybody connected with this original franchise has any success. But by then they have Mike Modano and they have a lot of really good players. Some of the stories of some of the promotions that Charlie O. Finley attempted to use to get people to come enraged players. But the interesting thing is one of the most active and vibrant fan clubs in all of hockey today. And they haven't been any California Golden Seals for a very long time, since, you know, 77, 78, when they're actually by then the Cleveland Barons. They still have these rabid fans who remember them and love them because they were the lovable losers. And in a sense, you know, think of how long people said, oh, the Red Sox are awful, they're awful, they're awful. No, they just hadn't won the World Series. But they would make the World Series, and they would have good seasons, and they would play right down to the wire, and they had great players and memorable times between 1918 and when they finally won. There's none of that for the Oakland, California. Yeah.
Two trips
Golden
to the
Seals.
Playoffs, eliminated in the first round both times.
Eliminated in the play both times, and some of the. I mean, they don't even have an all-time scorer. I mean, their all-time coaching percentages. Here's what their coaches' winning percentages were: 292, 381. They're all in the 300s, except for Marshall Johnson, who coached them for a total of 22 games and had a 0.159 winning percentage. Now, some of the stats are in dispute because the NHL keeps them differently than the other. They never averaged more than 6,200 people per game. I mean,
remember Charlie Simmer?
Oh, yeah. Charlie Simmer, who was with them, and they got rid of him and became a star in Los Angeles.
He was the last California Golden Seal to play professional hockey when he finally finished up in the IHL in 1992.
Yeah, he played forever. There's just some amazing. So anyway, the all-time leading scorer is Al Nicholson, right?
Al McAdam.
Oh, no, Al Nicholson.
Oh.
He played 349 games. He had 137 goals and 285 points on 103 minutes and penalties. That's regular season. The all-time is Al McAdam. So there were some fabulous players who came through. Reggie Leach played there. Earl Ingerfield, who was a hero of mine growing up. Wayne Connolly, Dan Blatt. I mean, you could go through this long list of people, but as soon as they got them, they got rid of them. And one way or another, either because they didn't want to pay them, or in some cases, just because the players wanted out. Many hockey experts say the guy who got the rawest deal of ever was Gilles Meloche, phenomenally good goalie, who played. They would leave him in when it was 9-0 and he'd face 54 shots.
Well, I'm trying to think back to when they joined the league, but the next closest franchise would have been what, St. Louis, maybe?
Yeah, St. Louis and Chicago were the two close. And they kept promising Vancouver and Seattle were coming. Seattle is coming now, it looks like. But, you know, that's been a while. The thing is, it's a really well-written book. It's incredibly well-researched. If you like tables and charts, the back is full of them. But if you really wanted to read how not to run a sports franchise, if you think the team you root for is run poorly, if you're a Browns fan, a Giants fan, you know, name the other hapless people, You got to read this because if ever there's a book about snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, it's The California Golden Seals, The Tale of White Skates, Red Ink, and One of the NHL's Most Outlandish Teams by Steve Currier, and it's from our friends at the University of Nebraska Press.
Excellent. Thank you, Bruce.
Fun book. A quick shout out that, if I can, January 6th, Shirley Turner will be reading from The Destroying Angel at the Bangor Library at 11 o'clock and signing books. It's a book I helped get published, and I really hope people come out. It's a really amazing story.
Oh, fantastic.